so much older then. I'm younger than that now.
Welcome into Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton. Not long ago, a woman by the name of Helen Denmark celebrated her 108th birthday with her family or friends and the staff at her assisted living community in Birmingham, Alabama. And when a local television reporter asked Helen how she keeps herself feeling so young, she replied, "Drinking wine, eating dessert, and flirting with men with mustaches." And of course, that's a prescription that many have been waiting for a very long time. But I think the real prescription hidden in those words is simply attitude, a never-ending enthusiasm for life's simple pleasures. That's the key. And for more than 15 years now, Growing Bolder has been working literally every day to present an optimistic yet authentic vision for growing older in America, not the damaging and the demeaning ageist vision that says life after 70 or 80 is really nothing but loss, limitation, and loneliness. And of course, not the Pollyanna-ish unrealistic vision that it's nothing but vibrant health, running marathons, skydiving, and doing things like that. We don't ignore the struggles, but we do look at aging through a lens of possibility and opportunity. We don't regret. We celebrate the blessing of extra years, and we share the good news that no matter our age, our abilities, or challenges, we can all find our own way to experience joy. And we know this because we've learned this from thousands of older adults that we've interviewed and produced stories on over the years. The ordinary people of all ages, all abilities, and all disabilities who not only tell us, but they show us that life is worth living. I mean, we were there when 110-year-old Oney Ponder voted in the presidential election. We were there when 109-year-old Ruth Hamilton became the world's oldest blogger. When Wilhelmina Horn danced on her 107th birthday. We were there when 105-year-old Julia Hawkins set a world age group record in the 100-meter dash. And we were there when 103-year-old artist Harold Rotenberg was honored at a major museum. We interviewed 108-year-old bowler Bill Hargrove between frames at a local bowling alley. We interviewed 103-year-old Bill Tapia between practice sessions for an upcoming ukulele concert. Frankie Manning, after he danced with 97 different women to celebrate his 97th birthday. We interviewed the world's oldest college graduate, the oldest woman to ever reach the North Pole, the oldest volunteer, the world's oldest yoga instructor, mayor, the world's oldest published author, the oldest NASCAR driver, showgirl, teacher, Olympian. I mean, if they are the world's oldest at just about anything, chances are we've interviewed them, or at least we've tried to. We've learned from them, and we've shared their wisdom and their insight into happy, healthy, and authentic aging. And this is why I'm so excited to talk to Dr. Catherine Esty. Dr. Esty is a social psychologist who retired from her psychotherapy practice at the age of 87, but she certainly hasn't retired from making a difference. She's now 89 years old. She lectures regularly, and she's the author of the award-winning 80-somethings, A Practical Guide to Letting Go, Aging Well, and Finding Unexpected Happiness. So let's welcome to the program Dr. Esty. Doctor, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, and I'm very happy to be here, Mark. I feel like a youngin with all those people in their hundreds. Because actually, I'm 5 days away from being 90, so I'm getting closer to them, but I've still got a way to go to catch up to all of them.
Well, congratulations. And, you know, I know you're not one that needs a pep talk, but let me just respond to what you just said. We have spoken to more nonagenarians, people in their 90s, who have actually told us that the 90s were, in fact, the best decade of their life, which has inspired me so much. And I only share that with you because you're about to turn 90. And, you know, our hopes for you are that your 90s have been as great and as productive as your 80s.
Well, I hope that's true. I've been in the 80s, and that's been the time I found out there was so much good news about the 80s, but I'm not sure yet. People are asking me if I'm going to write a book about 90-somethings, and I have to wait and see on that one.
Well, let's talk about that, because I get questions and see questions online all the time asking, When do you really begin to feel old? And you know, some people say 60 and some people say 40. You say that you rolled right straight through your 70s, but at age 80, that was it for you. For the first time, you felt old, an experience that actually led you to writing this book. What happened that made you want to find out what others were experiencing in their 80s?
Yeah, it was a single incident I had. I had just turned 80. I was in my summer place up in the Adirondacks, and three of my kids were there and some grandkids, and it was a beautiful day, and people said, it's a Cat Mountain day. And Cat Mountain is a small nearby mountain that we have climbed every year for 60, 70 years. And so of course I thought that, well, that it is, it's beautiful today. It'll be, the view will be spectacular. Let's go. But it had rained the night before, and when we started out, I slipped early on and kind of scraped my knee, and then I kind of fell again. And so when we got up to the place where you have to kind of scramble and hold on to trees to, and kind of, there's this kind of rocks that are there, that's very rocky. I looked at that steep part, and I realized I was not going to make it. And just couldn't believe it, because I usually power through things, and I had climbed that mountain the year before. And so it was just this moment when I realized I am getting older, and I am not going to be able to just keep on doing everything by pushing through. I am now having to accept I am older. Well, I had to sit down, and all the other kids, the grandkids, scrambled up the mountain, and one of my sons sat with me, and I actually had a cry, and then we got laughing after that, because I didn't have my failure to summit. And I came to terms at that moment that things would have to change for me. So it was really a wake-up call that I needed to accept that I just couldn't keep going as usual.
Yeah, I love that story. It was a Cat Mountain day, and you just couldn't conquer the cat. But what makes you different, and I think probably the people that you feature in your book, is that so many of us reach an intersection, if you will, a point like you did, and so many just back down, and they think it's over instead of adapting, accommodating, finding a way to continue to extract joy out of our life. And as you know, doctor, you know, better than anybody, our culture has this tendency to lump all older people together, when in fact, this is really the most diverse group of older adults in human history. As one doctor once told us, if you've seen one 85-year-old, you've seen one 85-year-old. You can't make generalizations. As you began to research life in our 80s, were you frustrated about how little information there was about how we're aging?
I was, and I had fallen kind of into a funk when I got back from vacation that year, but I thought there must be some people who know how to thrive and flourish, and there must be some good things written about people in their 80s. Well, it turned out nobody had written about the 80s. There was just young people, like in their 50s, would write about the whole 65 to 105. And so I thought, well, I want to keep interviewing a lot of people because my question was, what is it really like to be in your 80s? And what are the range of, it's not one experience, but I wanted to interview enough people that I would get the range of experiences and see what were the common issues, transitions, and so on. So I started interviewing people. And first of all, the interesting thing was I got out of my funk quickly because I was having so much fun, and I had a kind of new project, a new purpose. And I interviewed for about a couple of years, interviewing people first I'm in a retirement community, and I interviewed people right there. And then as I traveled around here and there to visit people, I went to Ohio, I went to California, I had contacts in Montana, and I just kept calling people, and my findings were really, truly astonishing.
And as you began to interview these men and women, and you gathered these findings, you got their personal stories. As you mentioned, everyone was different, but there had to be common threads. What did you learn about life in our 80s that might apply to many of us, if not most?
Well, the big finding, the thing that was that most people in their 80s are happy. And certainly no one in their 40s thinks that. They see people on a cane or walk in a walker, and they think, oh my God, if that was happened to me, I'd shoot myself. But the people I interviewed. It was amazing. I asked everyone on a scale of 1 to 10, how happy are you? 10 being extraordinarily happy, 1 not at all happy. And almost everybody said they were an 8 or a 9 or a 10. And what I learned was that being happy did not depend on having avoided tragedy, upsets, failures, losses of a spouse. It really, people think it depends on not having bad things happen to you. But what it really depends on, part of it is attitude, as you were saying, Mark, and part of it is just learning how to mourn the losses, not to deny them, not to jump over them, but just to accept them. And the sad part was nobody expected to be happy. So, and what I found out was people in their 60s are happier than the people in their 50s. This is from my reading. By then I was doing readings too. And it's other social scientists that have sort of proven that people in their 60s are happier than the 50s. People in their 70s are happier than the 60s. And people in their 80s are happier than the 70s. So, when I tell audiences, I said, if you're 70, say, or even if you're just in the low 80s, you're going to be happier in these 10 years than you were in the last 10 years. And people nod, but I know deep down they don't really believe it, that they're going to be happy, unexpectedly happy. But when they get there, people have changed enough, and there are so many good news, so much good things have happened, that people are still holding on to their images of aging that they got from their grandparents. So many of them have a not too wonderful story, but it's very different. Aging today is not your grandparents' aging.
And thank goodness for that. You know, we're speaking with Dr. Catherine Estey, who's, a social scientist, a social psychologist who's written a fascinating book called 80-somethings, where she examines the life of a broad range of people in their 80s to try to find out, what makes them tick and what makes them happy. And so what does make them happy? I think we, as we get older, a lot of us have to deal with constant loss. We lose things. And at some point we realize that, less is more. We're downsizing not just the stuff that we own, but we're downsizing the crap in our life, if you will. Do you find that was one of the things that led to, an increased happiness for people in their 80s? There's less things to worry about or smaller things to enjoy?
Yeah, well, I think it is in many ways a shrinking world for people because they aren't as attached to toys or material things, and they aren't, most of them aren't working. The people are not striving. They're not kind of trying to achieve something. And so I think that letting go of striving is huge. But there's lots of other things. I think one is that most people in their 80s are healthy and active. And that's due, of course, to modern medicine. So that people, what we think of older people before is that many of them were in pain. But now most people are pain-free. And they're living longer. So we've all been given these gifts of so many years. When I was born in 1934, life expectancy was just 65, and that's why Social Security was set there for 65. But now it's 79, so we've gained all those years, and many people live to, like me, I have had the privilege of living till almost 90, I've been 89. Most of us have modern medicine that we get new shoulders and hips and ankles and knees. We have medicine for diabetes, heart disease is handled and it's so much more successfully. So, and it really makes a difference. I was just reading about someone about 100 years ago that was plagued by a toothache for her whole life. Well, today we have modern medicine takes care of that. So also we're learning, that people that are over 70 and 80 can learn. We used to say you can't teach an old dog new tricks, but I think it's not at all true. We learn differently. We're slower, especially on this technology kind of stuff. But once we get it, we hold on to it. And that's opened up worlds for people. There's, all kinds of retirement institutes where people learn and take courses. There's all language apps on our smartphones to learn the language. So life is just opens doors. Some doors do close. I mean, you can't decide to become a ballet dancer at 70. But when you look at what is open to you, all the possibilities, it's amazing. And the other thing is people don't know from the brain, about the brain, what we've learned, that it can heal itself as well as we can learn that it. So our brains, our mental health is better than other generations. We are not, there's less depression, less anxiety. I saw that when I did couple counseling, that the couples in their 70s, and I've had a few in their 80s too, they were, you know, they were calmer, they were mellowing out. And I think that there's a lot to look forward to. Plus, of course, the freedom to wake up in the morning and say, oh, I wonder what I'd like to do today. So there's a lot of things to look forward to that people are not aware of. I mean, they just don't stop and think about all these things that they have that remain for them. And they, you know, some people focus on their aches and pains, but so I'm trying to get people to wake up to what it's really like, and what all the good things, all the good news that does exist for people in their 80s and 60s. Yeah.
And you had to wake up to that yourself, because as you noted, you hit 80s and you were not happy about it. Talk a little bit, doctor, if you will, about the power of example, and specifically the example of ordinary people that we can relate to. Because as an academic person, as a social scientist, I'm pretty sure that you had read about or understood much of the possibilities that you're now describing. But talk about the impact of actually seeing it in action, of actually learning firsthand that people in their 80s, many of them are happy, healthy, and pain-free. What kind of an impact can that have on others?
Well, I think that that's why I put a lot of stories in my book, so that they'd get a lot of examples. And I think unlike most books, mine are all real people, and so that you can meet, you know, not all 128 people that I interviewed, but a good 50 to 70 people that are life stories. And I had the woman I think that first jolted me into this was a woman that I met who was before I was 80. I had this role model, but I hadn't applied it to myself. And she, after her husband died, this woman decided to get a pilot's license in the first place. And so she learned how to fly a pilot, an airplane. And she also took horseback trips with her grandchildren. And I saw this woman, and that was the first person I'd met that I thought, well, that really looks like a lot of fun. And that was challenging. So I think it is seeing the real people that are not famous people, you know, even, because that isn't as good an example as when you meet somebody that lives next door to you that is flourishing. And I say so many of us actually bloom. I mean, I think of myself that my 80s I've had many ways have seen it as a time of fruition and new things and really a time of joy.
Looking at our 80s and 90s as a time of joy is something we should all aspire to be doing. When we return, more with Dr. Catherine Esty. And later, we're going Boulder backstage to meet the voice behind Earth, Wind, and Fire. And then, he was a teen idol in the 60s and still going strong in his 80s. This is Growing Boulder.
Support for Growing Boulder provided by...
If you or a loved one are over 65 and need a ride, check out Uber. Many Medicare Advantage Flex cards help cover the cost of Uber rides to appointments and important deliveries with Uber Eats, like groceries and over-the-counter medication. Learn more at uberhealth.com/card or call 1-866-827-4584. Welcome back to Growing Boulder. I'm Mark Middleton. You know, one of the many things that the pandemic taught us is the importance of social connection, especially as we age, and not just social connection, but the important influence of having positive people around us. We're talking today with Dr. Catherine Esty, an 89-year-old psychotherapist and the author of the award-winning book, 80-somethings, A Practical Guide to Letting Go, Aging Well, and Finding Unexpected Happiness. Dr. Esty does live in a senior community, and of course, some are great and some not so much. I ask her about her experience in senior living.
Well, my experience has been, I mean, when I actually have been here a long time. I've been at this place for 12 years and I've seen it develop. It was good, but it's so much better now. And what's happened is it's really developed into a whole sense of community. And I think part of it was the pandemic. I mean, they used to tout this is independent living, but I think what's better than independent living is community living, where people help if somebody loses their spouse. There's a whole circle of people that are there to support, and people see that they are not alone in this world. And I think, and we have neighborhood groups so that people take care of people in their neighborhood. And I really now feel sorry for people that live out in the country on the end of a long driveway all by themselves, because that's a harder way to be in community than when you live, could go down to get your mail and there, and you talk to three people. And when I know when my husband died, I was taken care of by, people come and invite you to dinner. So I think community is very important, and people that aren't in a retirement community can create it.
So how about you personally, doctor, as you're about to turn 90 years old, are you optimistic about your 90s? Do you still have goals and dreams, or is it just kind of one day at a time?
Well, I'll tell you what I don't have is I don't have a lot of regrets. And I think as you get older, that's one thing you shed, that you stop saying, well, maybe I should have gone to a different college, or maybe I should have gotten married a little later, or whatever. So, but I think I do have a what I call an intentional life. I do. I think I don't set goals, and I'm not pushing myself, but I am thinking about the quality of what I want to do. I'm writing. I see myself as a writer. My purpose now is getting out this good news about aging, so it's also being a writer. And, my other purposes are my friends and my children and grandchildren and my cousins and my nieces and my nephews. And my family. And I've also always said that I think as you get older in the 80s and 90s, it's the time for friendships, because you do have time and the gift of time. And that gives you the ability to actually have friends. So I do, I have what I'd call intentional, but I don't call it goal driven in the sense that I'm not, I think people give up their bucket list too, because nobody that's 90 sets goal 5-year plans and 10-year plans. I mean, nobody plans for more than 18 months. So I think it's less pressure. That's the key thing. And I did do some interviews of people in their 90s, and some of them felt that it was had a few more challenges in the 80s. And so I'm keeping my mind open as to what I'll find for myself. And I think it's also very individual. You can't generalize, but I think it may be more. I've had the hunch that the 90s might be more challenging than the 80s, because the 80s is such a good news story.
Is there a prescription? I started this interview by mentioning the woman in Alabama who said, her key is wine, dessert, and flirting with men with mustaches. What is it for you? What's your routine? What's responsible for your positivity and your overall well-being?
Well, I think what's responsible is good fortune. I mean, I think anybody that's lived to be 90, there's been so many, near misses and sort of luck, and the country I was born in, my genes. I think I got good genes, so I'm, I think now I'm able to move, and I'm still dancing. That's what I have a Zumba class I do every week, and I have another kind of a mover class led by a ballet teacher that gets us all moving and I think that's helped a lot to be. But I think that the things that I think are really important, if I had to say them, you know, I've had, you know, the people have said, what are your guidelines? I think the four things I think that are important is that, you know, that you understand that relationships matter most. I mean, and almost everybody in their 80s and 90s know that relationships are what matter. And not a lot of people in their 40s and 50s don't know that. So I also think the second guideline is to take control of what you can control, and so that you can control your diet, you can control your activities, and you control going to the doctor and things like that. So take control of what you can control and let go of the rest. I think as I did my research, what I hadn't known before was that how important it is to have a purposeful life, to have a purpose. And that somebody, I think it was Kant, who said that you need somebody to love, you need something to do, and you need something to hope for. And I think that's something is maybe how you contribute in some way. People want to keep contributing. They don't want to be helped. And I know I learned this. I went to a kibbutz when I was in Israel once 20, 30 years ago, and I saw that they had everybody working. So even the 96-year-olds would have 3 or 4 hours a week of work. And so nobody was feeling they were just getting a free ride. Everybody contributed, and everybody had time off. And I think that is what we need to do. And I think you mentioned in the beginning, and we'll end with that maybe, because I do think that having a positive attitude is just so, so important. And maybe most people don't know, there's research on that now that says if you have a positive attitude towards aging, that will make you live, you will on average live 7.6 years longer than people that have a negative or don't have a positive attitude towards aging. We've got evidence for that, good data on that. So I think it is our attitude, it's having a purpose, it's our relationships, and it's taking control of and looking at what remains.
That is the attitude, folks. It's not what's lost, it's what remains. And as we learn from folks like 89-year-old Dr. Catherine Esty, what remains is always worth fighting for. Check out her book, 80-somethings, and you can learn more about her at her website, Catherine, that's Katharine Esty, Esty.com. When we return, you might not remember their names, but you will remember their hit songs.
Sign up for the Growing Boulder Insider newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingboulder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Boulder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingboulder.com/podcasts.
Welcome back to Growing Boulder. I'm Mark Middleton. Time now for a Growing Boulder classic. This time we rewind to our 2014 interview with Philip Bailey, the Grammy Award-winning lead singer of Earth, Wind, and Fire, a band that is still performing and has been rocking the world for more than 50 years. Philip is the voice behind some of the group's biggest hits and had just released his memoir, Shining Star, Braving the Elements of Earth, Wind, and Fire.
How are you, Philip?
I'm wonderful. How are you guys doing today?
Man, it is so nice to be able to talk to somebody from this band that's been a part of all of our lives. You've written this great book now, and I'm kind of curious, what made you want to write it now? Why was now the right time?
Well, it really kind of found me. I was on tour with David Foster and met his agent that was the agent for his book. And we just struck up a conversation and said that she would put me with two writers from the Bay Area that she that helped Alice Cooper on his book. And sure enough, that about that following year, she followed up and they contacted me. We started rolling tape and, you know, about a year and a half later, we went and got the deal with Penguin. And lo and behold, I did have a story.
The question is, do you have a story that can be told? You know, those were some pretty crazy times back in the day, weren't they, Philip?
They really are, you know, and the really, I didn't want a book that just kind of glorified all the highlights of my life, but I wanted it to be pretty, you know, as transparent as can be, with hope and possibility. And, you know, so I had to delve into some places that I haven't been in a long time and were somewhat uncomfortable. But if it serves toward inspiring someone that, you know, your humble beginnings don't have to define you or determine who you become or where you're going, then, you know, that's good, because that's really what the song Shining Star was about.
And there's so much in your book, too, Philip, about, you know, having to work together with other people that so many of us can learn from. You know, you said that early on you were a perfectionist and it caused a lot of problems for you in the recording process. Is that something that you learned to change about yourself?
It is something that I learned, and it's something that I learned through the late Charles Stepney, who was a very, very talented man, a writer, producer, arranger, conductor, and, you know, as talented as he was, for those things to come out of his mouth to say that, you know, that as important as music is to all of us who were working, that it wasn't more important than relationships, was a real sobering moment for me. You know, it's like, wow, you know, okay, maybe I need to rethink this.
Folks, we're talking with Philip Bailey, the voice behind Earth, Wind, and Fire, obviously a great talent and now, understandably, a very thoughtful guy. You know, Philip, it's never easy to be the one making the decisions, and in your band, Maurice White made some brilliant ones, but also some that didn't sit quite so well with the group. How do you see Maurice in the rearview mirror now?
Well, I think that you do what you know, and as you're living, you know, you're living and you're growing, and you're making decisions based on what you know. And you know, because of he made, like you said, he made some fantastic decisions. He was our mentor in so many positive ways, but because of some of the things that we experienced that weren't as positive, you know, it really helped me to understand, you know, through the rearview mirror where he was, and some of the decisions that I make now and have made for the last 20 years in leading Earth, Wind, and Fire you know, not reckon the wrong, but to just make more of a positive influence. And that's something that he started out to do. That's something that the band was made for.
You know, the whole Maurice White story is kind of interesting, too. You guys having to deal with, you know, his struggles with Parkinson's. You know, the band's been together 40 years, but there were many downs as well as many ups. You know, there was a time when the people just got tired of hearing from the band. But you fought hard to hold it all together, even in the downs. Where does that come from, and what can we learn from you for that?
Well, it really came from the essence of the lyrics in the songs. One thing that the songs say, and the reason for the band was to render a service to humanity, to give them a positive outlook, to raise their consciousness about themselves and spiritually as well. And so, you know, it's really about singing, being about what you're singing about. And then as I grew in my faith, I'm a Christian. I really begin to see that the whole was bigger than its parts, that Earth, Wind, and Fire really did have a very a mission. and one that was very positive. So that's the reason why 40 years later we can still draw now for, you know, generations of people coming to our shows and enjoying our music, and no one having to turn their heads or be ashamed of what's going on the stage, and people feeling better, you know, when they leave than when they came, you know, because of the positive message. And that's a big tribute to Maurice and his vision about what he wanted the music to be about.
The vibe is timeless. I mean, you guys are you know, still a pleasure to enjoy in every way imaginable. How old are you now, Philip, and what lies ahead? What do you still have left to do?
Well, I don't tell too many people. I just turned 63, May the 8th.
Yeah.
And I'm still touring the world and having fun. I'm actually working here in Vegas tonight, and then on to Chicago to do a date. But we'll be working through almost through until Thanksgiving, you know. So we're on the road a lot. I try to make it manageable nowadays, you know. But I'm really blessed to have you know, good health and strength and a good support system. And we're still having fun, and people are still appreciating the music globally. So we're somewhere on this globe, and the music is played every 3 minutes, some odd seconds, somewhere on the planet.
And good, Philip, to know that the voice of one of the greatest bands around is also one of the greatest guys around. Check out the book, Shining Star, Braving the Elements of Earth, Wind, and Fire. Our thanks to Philip Bailey.
That was Philip Bailey back in 2014. He's now 73 and still performing with Earth, Wind, and Fire. His other passion is the Music is Unity Foundation, which is a nonprofit that he founded after learning that over 20,000 children are pushed out of the foster care system every year and many struggle with homelessness. His foundation provides financial support to nonprofit foster care agencies to provide resources to those who are aging out of the foster care system. Good guy.
Well, I'm Bill Schaefer with Mark Middleton, and sometimes the best way to really take care of ourselves is by taking all the things that we should do and kind of turning them into where they're sort of habits. And you know, that's not as difficult as it sounds.
You know, really all you have to do is start by taking a simple single action and repeating it on a regular basis. Best-selling author and positive aging expert Barbara Hannah Grufferman uses the example of daily workouts to explain how you can start building up healthy habits that will help make you stronger in the years ahead.
To do everything better, you can take small steps. For example, strength training is so important, really at any age, because we all know that we start to lose bone mass when we're in our late 20s, but that really accelerates when we get older. And that's especially true of women. So, but men too. And you really need to take good care of your bones. So this is just one example. So what do? Do strength training exercises. Do the basics. Do the Jack LaLanne push-up. Maybe even one arm like you used to do. Do the plank. You don't have to start going crazy and joining a gym unless you really want to. But there are things that you can do every day that are simple. And the key, though, is to take an action. You know, choose this way of life, then take an action and do it on a regular basis, and then it will become a habit. And that's how habits are formed.
That is Barbara Hannah Grufferman explaining how creating the right habits for ourselves can be as simple as brushing our teeth. Up next, remember the song Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot Bikini? Of course you do. We're going Boulder backstage with the artist who was just 16 when he recorded it back in 1960.
She was afraid to come out in the open, and so a blanket around her she wore. She was afraid to come out in the open, and so she sat bundled up on the shore.
Two, three, four, tell the people what's...
We've got news. Watch.growingbolder.com, the world's first streaming site for active adults, is now live. Growing Boulder TV shows, national specials, documentaries, and inspiring videos on ordinary people living extraordinary lives 24/7 on demand for free. Watch.growingbolder.com is now live. Back in 2022 at the National Senior Games, the oldest competitor that year was 103-year-old Lindsey Tice, who shoots a score lower than his age just about every time he tees it up. Tice believes the health benefits from playing golf have extended his life into his 100s. Here's Lindsey and his son, Tim.
Most every time I play, I shoot better than my age. I'm 103. And I usually shoot around 100. I'm proud that I'm able to do that. I think it's helped to keep me going, helped to keep me healthy. I just enjoy being out with the people and out in the open and just enjoy playing.
Because he just has fun. You know, it's no pressure. And several times I've teased him about just going up and hitting the ball. You might want to look and think about it a little bit, but he just wants to have fun, and sometimes his better shots are when he doesn't even think about it. He is an inspiration. He's an inspiration to all of us. He works out 3 days a week at Wake Forest. He's been doing it for about 5 or 6 years now, and I know he's an inspiration to the people there and also to his golf group at home.
I just feel honored to be the oldest one still playing. As long as I can hold a stick. Really, I don't plan on quitting.
Lindsey is now 106 years old and officially older than sliced bread. Lindsey was born in 1918, and sliced bread wasn't a thing until 1923.
Say goodbye for the summer. Darling, I promise you this, I'll send you all my love every day in a letter sealed with a kiss.
Welcome back to Growing Boulder. I'm Mark Middleton. If you were a teenager in the 60s, you may not remember the name Brian Hyland, but you will definitely remember his songs. Brian was just a freshman in high school when his life changed forever. Let's go Boulder backstage with Bill Schaefer and Brian Hyland.
It was 1960. Brian Hyland was just 16 years old. One day he was a freshman in high school, and the next, an international teen idol. All because of a bathing suit?
It was a
Hyland was an office boy at Cap Records. He'd never sung with a band before, but they let him record some demos. And I guess they liked it. Everybody did. And in an instant, Hyland had a hit.
Up till that point in my neighborhood, I was invisible. With all the girls and all of that, I was just another kid in the neighborhood. And then when I got on television with a hit record, so that all changed.
You weren't trying to be, but all of a sudden you become this teen heartthrob.
Yeah.
Everything is different, and you're just a teen yourself. How did you handle that?
Just one day at a time.
You loved it. Right?
One day at a time.
It
was
every minute.
Yeah, like I said, I was invisible up to that point, and then all of a sudden everybody's lining up on my stoop for my autograph.
Itsy Bitsy did big things for Hyland. It became a million seller in just 8 weeks, and everything changed, except for him.
I was just focused on getting another song, just getting better.
So it wasn't stardom that pulled you into the business, it was the music.
Yes, definitely.
And the hits kept
coming, charting again 2 years later at the age of 18 with this.
Though we gotta say goodbye for the summer, darling, I promise you this, I'll send you all my love every day in a letter sealed with a kiss.
And now, over 60 years after, Hyland is back in the studio doing it again.
Worries on my mind, afraid of what I'll find.
Brian, you have had some really quality music come out in the last handful of years. Very strong singles, and that's why you're here at Solar Studio now.
Yeah.
To re-record Sealed with a Kiss in a whole new way that's gonna grab people.
Guess it's gonna be a cold, lonely summer, but I'll fill the emptiness.
What was it like for you, Brian, after 60 years to dive back to recreate this song? I guess recreate's a bad way to put it. You've kind of changed it and gave it a whole new vibe and feel.
Yeah, it's well, I've been doing it ever since it came out, but this was like a whole new take on it with the arrangement.
This year, Hyland has a whole new take on life as he turns 80, which is a big deal for a former teen idol who had a hard time ever getting used to even being 70.
I would be on a show, and I'd be talking to people backstage, and they would say, hey, Brian, how old are you? And I'd say, this is just when I turned 70. And I said, I'm 70, and I couldn't get it out hardly.
So what about 80?
I haven't thought about that one at all. You know, it's just, I guess, but, you know, other people that I know and that I've worked with, they're already halfway there to 90, you know, 85 or some, you know, 82, 83, and... So, I'm not alone.
But they still introduce you. Well, here he is, ladies and gentlemen, teen heartthrob Brian Hyland.
They say that, yes, yeah, they do.
And maybe he still is. After all, just last year, he married a woman he first fell in love with in 1964.
She's a wonderful person. She's a psychotherapist and a life coach. And we just get along perfectly.
For a former teen idol, Brian Hyland has a lot going on. He's a newlywed, updating his classic hits, recording new ones, and now in his 80s. Not bad for a guy who's only really wanted one thing in life.
I want to get up every morning and be able to play music. And however that turns out, that's okay with me.
Well, sadly, we cannot all become rock stars, but we can all find that thing that we want to do every day, even into our 80s and beyond, like Brian Hyland. Because the real takeaway from his story is to not be afraid to take chances, to embrace new experiences. He was an office boy. He had never even sung with a band, and yet he risked failure. He risked embarrassment, and it changed the rest of his life forever. Growing Bolder is all about the small choices each of us make every day, the choices that get us off the couch and not just out of the house, but out of our comfort zones. We'll see you next time.
The Growing Bolder Radio Show is a production of Growing Bolder, LLC, all rights reserved. This program was recorded at Growing Bolder Studios in Orlando and is available as a weekly podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Spotify, and TuneIn. It is written and produced by Jill Middleton, Mark Middleton, and Bill Schaefer. Technical director is Jason Morrow. Production manager is Michael Nanis. And our most important team member, you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep growing bolder every day.
Crimson flames tied through my ears, flowing high and mighty traps. Countless fire and flaming rope, using ideas as my maps. We'll meet on edges soon, said I, proud neath heated brow. Ah, but I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. Half-right prejudice leap for
Shoulder.